last left Wendy Carlos, she had just amassed $100,000 worth of equipment in today's money, of Moog parts, of sort of recording equipment and such. She builds her own 8-track recorder. Crazy feat. What does she do? We're going to find out how Wendy Carlos records an album that changes the synth game forever and changes your life and mine. And we will also help you make use of yet another tool in the Tune Shed.
Hey, welcome to the Tune Shed, the workshop for everything music from history, theory, creative process, production, you name it. We're here to become better music listeners, better creators, and better music lovers. I'm your host, Blake Murray, and I'm here with my dear childhood friend, near and dear to me, a professional musician. It's Marty Gray, everybody. What's up, Marty?
I'm near and dear. I'm near and dear.
I'm just so excited to figure out what happens, because you were, the whole last episode, you were just dropping all these incredible things that Wendy Carlos did, and there's more?
She's crazy, bro. We are not even going to cover her whole life. We are just going to cover one album that changed it all.
Ooh. One album to rule them all.
It still does rule. Yeah, it does rule them all still. It's great. Now, here's the thing. We are going to cover this one very brief moment in Wendy Carlos's life. Wendy Carlos goes on after this record to continually change the game and to continually be an amazing role model for trans people and to be an incredible advocate for synthesis. But it's too much. She's too prolific. She's done too much. So we are just covering this album, and we'll sort of touch on what it did to her public perception and how she sort of like reacted to all of this.
Okay.
That's the plan. So, okay. Wendy Carlos, she originally wants to do an album of her own music, but a friend, namely Rachel Elkind, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. I couldn't find a good pronunciation online. It's very hard to research this stuff. Rachel Elkind or Elkind is someone she meets very, very early on in her career at New York City. And Rachel Elkind, let's just go with Elkind. Rachel Elkind initially finds Wendy Carlos to be arrogant, but I think sort of discovers the true genius and maybe just like genius people can come off arrogant.
It's true. Yeah. Especially sometimes when you're not at a level, it's kind of, they're not dealing with some of these basic things as much. They're kind of processing in a new spot, so then those basic things come off as just, you know, like a little bit off-putting. I've sensed that with some of the smartest people I've met before.
Yeah,
too.
Me too. No, it can be crazy, because some people literally do know it all. You know, and it's like they can't help it. They
can't
just
argue
know
that,
it all,
you know.
You know it. Yeah. Yeah, there are a couple of people that I've had the pleasure of knowing that are just that smart.
Yeah.
You know, they like know how wrong you are before you even say it. It can be very...
It's maddening.
Frustrating. It's definitely maddening. But I'm sure Wendy Carlos is like that. So Rachel Elkind says, you know what you need to do? She suggests that they use the synthesizer to create music that's more familiar to the general listener and to sort of introduce the synthesizer as a credible new instrument. That's their goal. So Wendy Carlos doesn't sort of, like, this isn't her idea to popularize the synthesizer this way. She sort of wants to do something with the synth, and she wants to, like, be creative with it. And Rachel Elkind comes in and she says, this is what you need to do. You need to, like, record Bach. You need to do this. So, brilliant. Use a medium like Baroque music to showcase the musical capabilities of a piece of equipment that, up until now, has been a funny sci-fi machine.
Yeah.
You know? That's the goal. So, they get to it. And each figure, each line of Bach, and remember, like, Bach fugues sometimes are 8 parts, 16 parts. they record some organ music, but even the organ has two hands going in polyphony and a foot pedal. So there are
Yeah.
multiple parts to record. And the Moog is a monophonic synthesizer. So you
Oh.
have to, she records each individual note, each line separately.
Yeah, because you get monophonic means you can only play one note at a time, essentially, right?
Right.
Wow.
So, and that's why Bach is really good, because there really aren't any, like with Bach, if you've ever listened to Bach, it's a lot of lines that with one note moving around.
Right, yep.
Right? Like a
And they
lot of
all
Bach.
interact beautifully.
Yeah, they're like dancing, little dancing butterflies, but there's really no like held sustained chords. There are, but in
Yeah.
Bach fugues, they oftentimes it's just like four lines and they're all solo instrument and they're all moving around.
Yep. Yeah. It is a really cool form of music.
It's
But yeah,
amazing.
that's a awesome sort of marriage of those three things. Something that's familiar to the public, so Bach probably more than now, even, but still now, but more than familiar to the public. Bringing in the synthesizer to take that and to sort of match the constraints of the synthesizer to Bach makes it really work.
It does, and it didn't come without headache. You
Oh,
know,
I'm
like
sure.
again, the synthesizer would oftentimes go out of tune. So,
Oh
and
no, I
when in
forgot.
interviews, like Wendy Carlos remembers back, and she's like, "Yeah, there were nights where we would record like two measures at a time, and then have to like knock the synthesizer, just like repatch stuff and wait for it to come back into tune, and then record again." And it just
Wow,
seems
this
insane.
is so early days for the synthesizer. That seems maddening.
Right. She also recounts instances where like the attack wasn't quite right on like a whole part, and because of these like six things coming together, she decides to record the first layer again because like the attack sounded right at first with just the solo instrument, but now that six instruments are in there, now the attack doesn't sound quite right, so she has to like go back and do it
Oh, all the pleasures of
again.
digital musical editing just
Right.
stripped away.
Oh God, yeah, and she's doing this all on her own homemade 8-track recorder at home, like with no help from an engineer. It's just her and Rachel doing
That's a,
everything.
and they're playing Bach.
And they're
Like,
playing Bach.
playing Bach is no joke.
It's not easy.
I'm so impressed.
It's amazing.
What a crazy undertaking.
And it there are estimates that this would have costed like upwards of $200,000 in today's money in like recording studio fees because of how arduous the whole process was. I mean, they worked 8 hours a day for 5 months on this record. And they were both working 40-hour work weeks too.
They're just doing this
Apparently.
full time.
They're doing this full time. They're
Oh my
like, they're super
gosh.
determined. And they aren't strangers to recording at this point. Like both,
Yeah.
both Wendy and Rachel have been working on music together like throughout the 60s. So this, I mean, they work on this in I think the end of 67. The record is re eventually released in 68. Right? Literally this project only could have happened in the perfect situation, and it takes a mechanical genius to sort of do this at home. This
Yeah.
is a home album. That doesn't happen.
That wasn't it. There was no bedroom producer.
No.
Like, that wasn't a thing.
Right. And so she at this point has like a pretty good relationship with Columbia A&R. And so they give her an advance, which she uses, I think, mainly for equipment and tape. And she uses the rest for sort of publishing. But they have this thing that they're doing, which is like Rock on Bach publishing fiasco thing that Columbia is doing. And so they're pushing Bach music right now.
Okay, and that's a big record company, right?
Yeah, Columbia Records is a big record company.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're still around. They're like one of the big three.
Oh, wow.
And so they're like, Wendy Carlos is working with Columbia to like do this thing. So they finish in 68, and it wasn't expected to do well because it's like classical music, which is sort of on its way out, sort of still has an audience, but it's synthesizers, and it's just like it's a weird pitch, it's a
That
weird
it
sell.
that is a weird, yeah. It's I was saying it was a perfect marriage earlier for all the reasons you described, but now when I think about the actual output, It does sound a bit strange.
Right. But I think it was the combination of how arduous the process was and how much of a perfectionist both Rachel and Wendy are, combined with a really good concept, and the fact that there was this weird, like, Bach push at that time with Columbia Records. The album ended up being a huge success, like a smash hit. Like, unbelievably popular. And it just has that little bit of controversy with the classical music old guard, where, like, the classical music old guard was interested in this record because they're like, okay, someone's recording Bach on synthesizers. And so that you can read some reviews from the 60s that were like, well, the synthesizer isn't really able to capture what a violin can capture, not all the way, you
It
know?
sparked the
And
debate. So even people that maybe weren't in love with it were like, you have to go hear this album because this is something new.
yeah,
It's kind of like AI, how AI is sparking a debate in a way. It's like this new technology, right? So it's all these thoughts are coming out because of it. Love it or hate it.
Love it or hate it, it's there. And it's wild and it's new. And the album was just very well done. And I can't get the album.
What?
That's another surprise.
So,
It doesn't exist on streaming platforms. And it doesn't exist on
who owns it? Well,
YouTube.
Columbia, right?
You can still buy a CD, and I think you can still get a record. But I wasn't able to get a CD in time. I have it ordered and it's coming, but I couldn't get it in time
You
for the.
ordered
Yeah, I did. I did. Well,
Oh, that's awesome.
I remember having like an MP3, like at least a few MP3s from music school, because they were included in our like musicology thing, like our packet of music. And so I was like desperately trying to find those in an old hard drive, and I couldn't. So I was like, oh crap, I'll just. But then I found someone on SoundCloud who like replicated, sort of tried to replicate exactly what Wendy Carlos did, and it's just like the composition is still the same, and all the patches are still the same. And I think he actually tracked it on a newer Moog, so he could like avoid the tuning issues and stuff, but with newer equipment, so it's like sort of the you don't have to listen to the old grainy 8-track
A little
anymore.
fresher.
Yeah, a little fresher. So that's what I found, and I think that's what we'll listen to.
Oh, beautiful.
It's the best I could do.
No, it's totally legit.
Please go and get her record if you're passionate about this stuff, though.
Yeah, I want to do that. I want to get that.
However, we do need to listen. So let's listen to an excerpt, from this guy on SoundCloud. That's one excerpt.
That drop hits so hard.
Not cool.
Also, how the synth shaped sort of from this more something more gentle before the drop to the harpsichord sound, like the pluck, like it really does invoke Bach. Like I kind of want to read some of those reviews that might have been hating on it a little bit. I just pulled my headphone cord out, forgive me. But yeah, it's fascinating because yeah, the old Bach stuff, it feels like Bach. It really
It's totally
does.
Bach. It's totally Bach. I know you can't hear me right now, but I said a bunch of scandalous stuff just now. It's crazy.
I knew you were mouthing stuff on my headphone cord. Is that I could
Dang it.
tell.
God dang it. No, it does sound like Bach, man. It's totally Bach. And she's sort of in that video of 1970. She repeatedly states like, I think Bach would like this. I don't think Bach would mind. And I tend to agree.
The way they're changing timbres in there is interesting. I would love to hear how they made those decisions, but it really feels like Bach to me. I don't know. I'm
It
not a
does.
Bach expert. Who's that guy who plays Bach a lot? He's like a piano Savant.
I don't know.
Oh, he plays all the good Bach. And he had these YouTube videos where he just talks about the history of Bach and then plays Bach.
Oh,
If his
yeah.
name comes to me, I'll let you. It's a good one because I bet he has an opinion on it. He's a little newer.
Bet you he does. Want us to do another one?
Yes.
I have three.
Okay. It's powerful. That works. I mean, it sounds like a horn, but it also sounds like a synth, and it's not cheesy. It really works.
It's just always has struck me as so musical. And that was the point. I just think she's such a great force because she had an idea to make synthesis musical and to sort of like make a musical instrument, not to make it like a funny effects bank
Yeah.
pluggy machine with knobs, but to make a musical instrument. And she chose exactly the right project, and it was a smash hit. It's just such a great story.
Yeah, the focus is incredible because this is, multiple years and a lot of dedicated hard work to sort of take this thing that was just a bunch of boxes on what you call it, a sci-fi wall
Yeah,
and
sci-fi
turning
wall.
that into something that's expressive and relatable to
Yeah.
everyone.
And if you look at some of sort of like the little rips on YouTube from her, people in the comments are like, "Oh yeah, it was Wendy Carlos's it was Switched on Bach," which is the record that we're talking about. Switched on Bach. It was Switched on Bach that got me to buy my first synth in the 70s. And
Oh.
like it convinced everyone. Like everyone was sold.
Wow,
Whoever
so
was in
good
the
for
electronic
Moog.
music world, super good for Moog. Oh yeah. Like, I think Moog has a ton to owe to Wendy Carlos, for sure.
Yeah, let alone all the inventions. And then she goes out and does the big PR for him, too.
Oh yeah, she literally like makes the Moog what it is, and then transforms how people see the Moog. Like, both, she does both of it.
She's like, come on, world, just come on with me. I'm gonna bring you to where you need to be. Don't
She
worry
knew.
about it.
Oh
I
yeah.
know what's up. You just come along.
Bro, she had the vision. She had the vision.
So epic.
So
What a
sick.
success story. It's incredible.
So this record blows up and she becomes a celebrity. I mean, the record's released in 68. So the thing that we saw in the last episode from 1970 happens after Switched on Bach is released. And sort of, she has huge gripes with her fame. She does not like being famous. She does not like the spotlight. She is actively still transitioning in 68. I mean, the year that the record was released was the first year she started her hormone therapy.
Oh, wow.
Right? And so this like final solitude of it's like this transition happens in tandem with her newfound fame. And
Wow.
so she like is refusing interviews. She is trying to stay away from the public eye as much as she can.
And they're all hunting for her, essentially.
Right. So much so that I think until very, very recently, Columbia still had the wrong name for her. They still listed the artist as Walter Carlos.
Oh.
That may still be the case, which is crazy.
That is
But
crazy.
yeah, they like misnamed. I mean, but this was at her behest. Like she didn't correct. She didn't correct the name until very much later. She didn't come out to the public until like 79.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's a grand deal of privacy around her whole transition and how much that really was not supported by fame, right? And how those
Right.
things just did not go together.
Right. And her number one passion was just making the synthesizer into a musical instrument.
Right.
And she likely thought that being super outspoken about her transition would probably endanger that.
Totally, yeah.
And so she like stayed hidden. She like ducked for years, for a long time.
Wow, that must have been very hard to balance those things.
Yeah, I can't imagine what that must have been like in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah,
Just
no
being
idea.
like, oh my Lord. And now you're involved in the classical world, which is not known for its progressive ideas.
Oh my God.
Like you're one of the first openly trans people and messing with fame and classical music, and it's
And
just
the future of
gotten so
music.
difficult.
That is a lot of things intersecting all at once. Wow.
And if you do ever, if you're curious, do get the chance to read her interview with Playboy that she did, because she sort of goes through all of this. And after that interview, she was super frustrated that Playboy didn't talk more about music, and I think that's super telling.
Wait a minute. So how did she get it? How did the interview with Playboy come up? Was this in her, how old was she then, or
This
when
was
did
in
this happen?
79.
79. Okay.
She gets interviewed by Playboy in 79.
What's this?
They're interested in, because this is, remember, this is after counterculture is done. This is sort of like years down. This is after the 70s are over. And
Yeah.
so they're interested in shedding light on like the whole trans issue. And so
Oh.
they're like, okay, there's this like synth god, and we need to like interview her. And she agrees to the interview. She comes out to the public, and after the interview's over, they like mainly talk about transitioning and like what being a trans person is like, and sort of like her trans story. And
Interesting.
after the interview, she's like, they didn't ask, they like asked about music for like 2 times. She's super like annoyed at that. And I think that's so telling.
Huh.
She just sort of has this like throwaway attitude about the public's perception of her. Like, she
Yeah.
almost doesn't want it. She just doesn't want it to be an issue. She's like, I just want to make me good music, man.
I mean, that's how it should be. If someone wants to make good music and doesn't want to, have any stress around being trans, that's, so what was Playboy's take? I don't, are they, what type of company are there? What was their comment? I gotta find that interview. I'm curious now.
It's a fascinating interview.
Huh.
I mean, it struck me, if that kind of interview were conducted today, it would be seen as like, it's like super ignorant. Like the
Right.
questions being asked is like very basic, and at some points in the modern eye would consider that like those kind of questions offensive.
Totally, yeah.
But keep in mind, this is 79. Most people in America have no idea what a trans person is. They've
All
never heard
right.
of that before.
So that was the angle they were taking, trying to like educate America what that was.
I think so.
Whereas she was just thinking about music coming in. That's an interesting dissonance there.
I think she has always been regarded as an incredible figure.
Yeah.
But again, most people knew her as Walter Carlos because that's who she presented to the world when she released Switched on Bach. So when most people get that album, they see Walter Carlos, Switched on Bach. They imagine a man.
Yeah.
And so I mean, this is a huge reason why she doesn't like come out to the public for so long,
Yep.
because she's been living her life even before the record. She knows she knew she was a girl from age 5 or 6. You
Yeah.
know, she's like actively living as a woman.
Yeah.
And so
So she's very
there's
moved on from that. She's a woman,
she's
is
over
very
it.
established, and the
Oh yeah,
world is
she's
just
super duper over it.
trying to figure it out. It's kind of the same thing. It's sort of like it's less of a vision in this stance, whereas like the synth and making that into a real music instrument was her vision. She said, "Come on, everyone, come along." She's just like, she's on her path. She's kind of ahead. And she just wants everyone to catch up and be there with her, and it's kind of frustrated by people who are just behind on that,
Yeah, it
which
seems like
makes
the whole
sense.
trans thing is more of a pickle for her.
Yeah.
She's like, ah, jeez, like,
Come on,
yeah,
people.
what do I do? Yeah, she's like, but she's trying. I mean, she's like faking being a guy. She's like putting on a fake persona to like
Yeah.
appease the public in 1970,
Yeah.
so that then again, the BBC and the world around the Moog synthesis knows her as Walter Carlos.
Yeah, and I imagine
So
there's a
there's this
good deal
pickle.
sort of pressure and stress around that as well. I can't imagine what it would be like. Wow, that's incredible.
What an incredible story. And that's I think where we should leave it. We should leave Wendy on her path.
Wow. If anyone finds the Playboy interview, send it to us at thetuneshedpodcast@gmail.com. That's pretty cool. And what an incredible story. And it's good to remember her and think of her every time we play with that little wheel on the edge of the synth, or every time a key is sensitive, and every time we hear Bach, maybe.
Every time you wiggle that pitch bend, wiggle it for Wendy, baby. Wiggle it for Wendy.
Hey, wiggle it for Wendy. All right. On that note, much love, everybody. It's been another great episode, and until soon, Marty.
Bye.